Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. And I know I always say the Wednesday show is going to be a great show, but this is going to be a great show. This is a very, very fine show. Second hour, our good friend Scott Wieman will be here. And if you've listened to Scott before, you know he's the founder of Catholic in Recovery. We'll talk about addiction and recovery in a very real way. So if this is something you deal with in your life, in your family, for yourself, or with someone else, you are welcome to call second hour and talk with Scott Wieman. If you don't know about Catholic in Recovery, and that sounds like something you'd be interested in, we'll have a great time with Scott the second hour. He's a great guest, but also really important work that he's doing. The first hour, we welcome someone that I am actually delighted to get to meet today, Monica. I've known her as Monica Miller, but Monica Migliorino Miller is the full proper name. Has been active and important and helpful and doing God's work in the pro-life movement for a very, very long time. There are just some people who have not only stayed at it, but been creative and productive as they did that pro-life work. And we'll talk to her a little bit about that. But she has a new book called In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. And when I saw that, I thought, that's brilliant, just to take the first three chapters of Genesis and really kind of flesh out for people what they mean and what they have meant and why they are important. So you are welcome to call if you want to talk about the first three chapters of the book of Genesis. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Monica Migliorino Miller. I'm working really hard on that middle name. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
You did a great job.
Okay. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, it is a delight to meet you, and thank you for the decades of work defending human life.
Thank you.
Is this related to that work, this new book, In the Beginning?
Yeah, well, maybe indirectly. I don't fancy this as a pro-life book or focused specifically on the issue of the right to life or abortion, though I do address that in one of my chapters. Yes.
A lot of Christians today, I think, would say maybe they might not say it, but they treat the early chapters of the Book of Genesis more or less as a problem. For example, they struggle with how to reconcile those chapters on creation with the modern theories of evolution. And so this creates a problem for them. You don't see the first three chapters of Genesis as a problem. How do you see them?
I think the first three chapters are most important in terms of the theological lessons regarding reality and the meaning of human life, our relationship with God, and the importance of the created order. And also the ethics, the morality that's presented, and the anthropology that we have. Those are, I think, the ultimate truths. I mean, Genesis certainly teaches that whether it was, you know, the world's created in six 24-hour days, okay, or it took maybe millions of years for the world to develop the way that we understand it from science. Nonetheless, it's God's world. His hand is in it, and it's an intentional creation. It's not an accident. So it's full of meaning as a consequence of that. And then I do talk about natural law in this book, which I think is really, I make a statement in the book that if you had to, I think, identify our current most important problem, it's a denial of natural law. So that's why, you know, what I'm trying to do in this, and that's why I think Catholic Answers wanted it, is I am providing, in some ways, the most fundamental apologetics. You know, I'm not talking about the divinity of Christ or the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist or the Trinity and all of those important doctrines. I'm starting from scratch.
Right, as God did. And that's the thing, is right from the get-go, it's easy enough to read through those chapters, I think, and in some ways almost for the person who's been exposed to it, to kind of almost gloss a lot of it, almost speed read it, or just kind of grab a little bit here and there, because we know, okay, do I have to go through all 7 days? I know, I get it, and all that, but the opposite reading, which is what you do, of course, to devote a whole book to three chapters, to slow down and take each bit of it as meaningful and important, really reveals something new and amazing.
Well, and the book wants to be something that even a non-believer could pick up and read.
Yeah.
Because what I'm trying to do is explain how it is that Judeo-Christian religious tradition is the one religious tradition of all religions that really takes the dignity of the human person seriously, and this world seriously. And the most dangerous heresy that Christianity, the church, had to deal with in its early centuries was this dualist pessimism, that we would call Gnosticism, right?
Yeah.
And this hostility between the world of God and spirit versus the world of matter. And I think that, and I argue, in the book, that's the heresy that will never die. It'll be around 5 minutes before the second coming of Jesus. And we see it already with the way that we deal with even gender and marriage and human sexuality in our modern world. So I want to be able to explain why it matters what you believe, why it matters what you think about God, about the human person, and about the material created order. And depending on what your thoughts are on those issues, it's going to take you down certain kinds of moral paths that are either paths that enhance a human dignity or denigrate human dignity. And one of the fun things, Sai, I do in this book is the first part of it, I explain how it is when all is said and done, how the first chapters of Genesis were revolutionary, how they absolutely upended the cosmic pagan view of reality and replaced it with an optimism regarding the world and the human relationship with God and God's relationship with the human race and with the world that he created. And so you have this beautiful, for example, comparison between the way God creates the world in Genesis chapter 1 versus that ancient pagan Babylonian creation story, the Enuma Elish. It's such a beautiful contrast. And then the question becomes, does it matter that there is this huge, incredible difference between the God in Genesis 1, who is the God of order, the God of peace, the God of tranquility, the God that creates without any competitors, there's no other cosmic will to get in his way, and the world is shot through with intention and purpose, rather than you see in the Enuma Elish, the world is created after eons and eons of violence and conflict and blood, and then the earth is basically the refuse of war, and human beings are created by the gods to be slaves, to tend the dead body of the monster goddess Tiamat. So the question is, does it matter which story do you prefer? Okay.
Right. But if you, the thing is, and one of the things that I think you take away from this book, by the way, our guest is Monica Migliorino Miller, and the book is In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. We had to take a break, but when I come back, I'll ask you your comment on this. But it does seem to me that if you you know, we have what we call modern values of human rights and human dignity, and if you have any attachment to those, you should have an enormous debt of gratitude to the Jewish people, yes. and particularly those who wrote yes. the first three chapters of the book of Genesis. As I said, we got to take a break, however, though. So I'm going to go to the break. You are welcome to call with your questions, whether you're Catholic or not. Of course, you're always welcome here. 888-318-7884. We're talking to Monica Migliorino Miller about the new book, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. 888-318-7884.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you ready to spread your wings? Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with exclusive news, program information, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. To sign up, go to EWTN.com, click subscribe, enter your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. Get your wings today. It's the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. What a great Wednesday show we've got for you. And I really do want to recommend the book. You can get it at shop.catholic.com or wherever you get your good Catholic books. In the beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. Monica Migliorino Miller is the author. And this is really important stuff. And I think we'll talk more about why this is really important stuff. But if you consider the predicament that our world is in, this predicament of meaninglessness and confusion and in some ways selfishness, the antidote is the God that's presented in those first three chapters, but also the meaning of the human person that's presented in those first three chapters. So I kind of left you, Monica, with a little bit of a challenge, so to speak, to say, why should a modern person be grateful for these first three chapters of the book of Genesis?
I think it's because of, among other things, of course, the positive anthropology that is presented in these first three chapters. The backbone, for example, of ethics is the fact that the human being in Genesis chapter 1 is created in the image and likeness of God. That already there, we already see that there is a status and a dignity to the human person, that the human person cannot simply be viewed as just a mere part of creation. That in some ways that creation would be dominating the human race. And you know, before the break, I was talking about that Babylonian creation story. That's exactly what happens in the Babylonian cosmos. The human being is an afterthought, there to tend as slaves the dead vanquished conquered goddess, but it's absolutely flipped the other way in Genesis chapter 1, where the human being has a relationship with God, a dignity given by God, and that is why the human person, the human life and the right to life is inviolable. Because when you attack the human person, as we do today, unfortunately, with legalized abortion and so on, you are attacking something sacred to God. And so this, you know, we're going to go past that ancient pessimism regarding the status of the human being. And I might digress a little bit here also in terms of the status of women in Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3. And I do spend a great deal of time on this particular subject. I find it maybe slightly amusing when we get to Genesis chapter 2 and we see that, we again, an anthropological statement, it is not good for the man to be alone. Okay, so we know then that the human person is created for communion with others. But God creates a woman to be the ultimate companion for the man. And the woman is I will create for him, as, and we get these you know, multiple different kinds of translations of the original Hebrew, the suitable partner, the helpmate, the helpmeet, if you go back to the Elizabethan English and so on. But the word itself in the original Hebrew is Ezar, E-Z-E-R. I will create the Ezar for him. And what is it then that, what is the meaning of that term in relation to the creation of the woman? She is his savior. The Ezar is a savior, okay? She's there to rescue the man from that problem, as John Paul II would have said, the problem of original solitude. And so the status of the woman there, the woman is the one that actually creates moral order in the world and provides the man with his identity, his purpose, his vision, and she is the center, the female there creates the center of human communion, where you have the first language, the first human utterance is a celebration of the other, where Adam celebrates, this one at last is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And then we have the ultimate lesson there, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And so the one flesh unity of man and woman is the center of creation. And again, the status of the woman that causes and creates that communion, if we let go of that, the whole thing collapses. And I don't think it's an accident, for example, as we see in Revelation, that Satan will make war upon the woman as we go all the way to the end of the Holy Scriptures. Satan, if the woman gives up her being the Ezar, the center of human communion, then we see everything collapses. And I think that's an important lesson in terms of the dignity of what it means to be female.
By the way, the number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about, in the beginning, crucial lessons for our world from the first three chapters of Genesis. Monica Migliorino Miller is our guest, and she's been, since the mid of the 1970s, been a leader of the pro-life movement in the United States. And I'm sure that much of that experience informs the love of these chapters of the Bible, because they are so connected to the meaning of human life, what it is to be a human, and why being a human is of great importance, that each particular human life is of great importance. This does seem to me to be also a Jewish contribution to the entire history of the world, is the idea that an individual matters. Now, I'm not saying that the Jewish people are the only people who thought of this or that it occurred to them, but the way that the human person is presented, and you call it an anthropology, in these early chapters of Genesis, and then supported throughout the rest of Scripture, is that the individual person is beloved, is something very, very special.
Well, right, and that's that. And again, it's fun. I think it's fun for the reader to go through these pages, because I explain the worldview outside of Judaism, that this the idea that the anything outside of the deity shouldn't really be there, according to the pagan cosmology. Everything outside of the deity is essentially a kind of fall from an original one. And so the goal is actually to erase yourself, to dissolve yourself. And this idea actually exists, and this is certainly in Gnosticism, as we see in the basically the first heresy that the Catholic Church had to deal with, that even to the point where you really don't exist. Okay, if you think that you are a true individual self,
yeah,
you are in a delusion, and you need to discover the enlightenment. And the enlightenment is this Gnostic secret that ultimately the world of matter is an illusion. And the more you feed the illusion, the more then you are trapped in the evil world of matter. And the goal of religion is to escape, to get out. And I even use that language in the book. What's the goal of ancient pagan religion? Get out.
Yeah, right.
Get out of here, right? And so what you want to accomplish then is to dissolve yourself back into the deity, and you cease to exist. And I even explain how there are some radical feminist theologians that basically have reinvented that cosmos. Rosemary Radford Ruther, in particular. But the beauty, the key to the whole shoot and match, honestly, is this genius of ancient Judaism. The ancient world was identified by that radical opposition between spirit on the one side and matter on the other. And the goal then is to have spirit. Spirit must always dominate matter, and ultimately it should eliminate it. But what we have, what we see, this beautiful thing in Genesis chapter 1, is that there is a difference between God and matter. We don't deny that, of course. There's a difference between God and the created order. But here, this is the thing that makes all the difference. Guess what, folks? God and the world of matter are harmonious. There is no conflict between them. They get along. And you see that beautiful statement at the very end of Genesis chapter 1, where God looked at everything that he made and found it what? Very good. Right?
Yes.
So
yes.
That says that creates an openness and an optimism, and smashes like a hammer that ancient pagan pessimism, that there's this built-in inherent hostility between the world of spirit and the world of matter. And I also argue the theological argument that ends this entire debate is the fact that in Christianity, God becomes man. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And so there is that right there, we are done with any form of hostility. And I even make the argument right now, right this, whatever it means to be in eternity for the second person of the Holy Trinity, he has the wounds of his passion. And that means that the historical order has for all eternity impacted God himself. He doesn't shed his body. He doesn't dissolve those wounds. And I always was a little perplexed. You know, I would think, you know, if I was going to get raised from the dead, right, that my scars would be gone and my wounds would be healed. But there it is. He still bears the impressions of the historical order even into eternity.
Again, the number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. The first three chapters of Genesis, which is what your book In the Beginning is about, then it seems to me the way you're talking are a balance against the materialist who says matter is the thing and the only thing, but is also a balance against the over-spiritualizing of life that says matter doesn't matter, so to speak. But it's this holy and healthy middle way.
Yes, exactly, and it's the genius of Judaism that has given us this beautiful understanding of the world and the relationship of God to the world.
We got to take a quick break. Your call's welcome. We're talking about In the Beginning, the new book about the first three chapters of Genesis with Monica Migliorino Miller. 888-318-7884. When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
As we read the Gospels, every Christian faces the question again and again, what does Jesus mean? Getting the answer right is critical to both growth in holiness and fruitful evangelization. Want to know Jesus better so you can introduce him to your friends? Then it's time to get serious about understanding his words. Why not join Catholic Answers for our 10th annual Apologetics Conference? Learn from me the parables, sermons, and conversations of Jesus Christ, September 26th through 29th, right here in sunny San Diego. Learn from our guests, Dr. Scott Hahn and Kimberly Hahn, Dr. Ray Guarendi, Father Sebastian Walsh, Billy Junker, Father Paul Check, and, of course, all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. It'll be 4 days of fun, faith, fellowship, and a live radio show. Seats are still available, but going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Second hour, Scott Wieman will be back for his, what do we get Scott about? Quarterly we get Scott in here. We'll talk about addiction and recovery. Also, we just like people to meet Scott and get to know about his ministry, because Catholic in recovery is just one of the most important Catholic things going. Taking the healing ministry of Jesus in wonderful new directions in parishes and in other places. So if you want to talk about healing from addiction, next hour is the hour for you. This hour, we're talking about lessons that we can take in our time, in our world, in this modern context from the first three chapters of Genesis. Monica Migliorino Miller's new book is In the Beginning, and it's about those first three chapters. And you are welcome to call if you have questions about that. I'll tell you what I'd like to do, too. I'd like to invite somebody who's not a believer, doesn't believe in Christianity, and I'll give you a free copy of the book, a caller, because we were just talking at the break, Monica and I, about her hope that non-Christians and non-religious people will read this because it gives a kind of introduction to how Christians look at the world. So if you got a question and you're not a believer, we'll give you a free copy of the book when you call 888-318-7884. And also, we'd just like to have a conversation with you about it, because It's a kind of a Christian thing. Let us reason together. Actually, that's a Jewish and Christian thing. Let us reason together. 888-318-7884 is the number. Monica, before I go back to talking about the book, I do want to ask you about one thing, because I know that you have been a leader in the pro-life movement for a long, long time. And that means now that you've come into conflict with the federal government. So will you tell us about that?
Well, maybe a little backstory here. Some of your viewers and listeners may be familiar with 9 pro-lifers who were very recently, within the last 2 to 3 weeks, actually sentenced to federal prison. And this was for a rescue that they did at a late-term abortion center in Washington, D.C., where indeed unborn children are aborted, killed there through the 9th month of gestation, the Sant'Angelo abortion center. And this was what is termed nowadays, shall we say, as a traditional rescue. They actually did stand in front of the door that leads to the procedure rooms and so on. And they knew, they anticipated, Cy, that they would most likely be charged with the FACE Act, the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, and which is a law that prohibits any kind of quote-unquote physical obstruction to reproductive health care, okay? But these pro-lifers were also unprecedented, literally unprecedented in the history of legalized abortion and the pro-life movement. The Department of Justice, I would say probably, because of the Biden administration, which is very pro-abortion, brought an additional charge against these rescuers, and that would be conspiracy to interfere with civil rights. That had a 10-year maximum jail term attached to it. So these rescuers were sentenced within the last 2 to 3 weeks. One of the rescuers, Lauren Handy, for example, because she led, she organized this rescue, she was sentenced to 4 years, 9 months in federal prison and so on. But there's another kind of rescue called Red Rose Rescues. And Red Rose Rescues are designed not to engage in any kind of physical obstruction or in interfering with anyone's freedom of movement, and thus to avoid the charge, the violation of the FACE Act. I participated in a number of these Red Rose Rescues myself. There's been 37 of these rescues since the year 2017. And none of us have ever been charged with FACE. Okay, why? Because we don't engage in any type of physical obstruction. And people want to find out, well, what do we do? Well, you could go easily to Red Rose Rescue, all one word, redroserescue.com, and take a look at our mission statement there. If I had to very quickly, explain what it is, it's basically, in a sense, moving sidewalk counseling into the waiting room. So at those last few precious minutes before these women are going to walk down the hallway to abort their babies, we give them that last final opportunity to turn around and to choose life. In any case, unfortunately, the Department of Justice has decided to actually bring a FACE case against us for 2 rescues that we did in Ohio back in June of 2021. In fact, today is the anniversary of the rescue that I participated in on June 5th. And so what they're going to do, we see the handwriting on the wall. They're going to try to stretch and distort the language of the FACE Act to bring out the kind of rescue that we do under that charge. It's going to be a very interesting lawsuit. It's a civil suit, not a criminal suit, which already, by the wayside, tells you they know they're in a weaker position in terms of being able to get a conviction. So I'm going to ask for prayers.
Please.
This is a very, very important lawsuit.
And if people want to kind of follow it or find out more, do you have a place that they can go to learn about it?
Sure. Right now, we do have an article up at prolifesociety.com. So that would be the website for Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, which is my group. And there's an article there that explains what this lawsuit is all about. And there's also some articles that I wrote regarding the recent sentencings that happened in Washington, D.C. for these other nine rescuers. So easy enough, pro-life, no hyphen, prolifesociety.com. And if anybody wants to contact us, there's a contact tab there, and I'll receive emails from people.
Please do check it out. Please pray for our guests, Monica Migliorino Miller, and all of her co-defendants in that. Are you called a defendant in a civil case?
Yes, we're a defendant. Right. There's six other pro-lifers involved, including Father Fidelius Moshensky of the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal.
Well, you do seem like a dangerous group. 888-318-7884 is the number here. 888-318-7884. In the beginning, crucial lessons for our world from the first three chapters of Genesis. Monica Migliorino Miller is the author. I want to ask you about time, because you spend a lot of time in the book talking about time. You give a whole chapter to time.
Right.
So what is it about the first three chapters of Genesis that has affected how we humans look at time, and why does that matter?
Okay, yeah, that's excellent. I'm so glad to talk about it. Certainly, the first three chapters of Genesis and Judaism as a whole revolutionized the way we understand existence, because in contrast to the ancient pagan view, Judaism sees time as the word is linear. In other words, time is moving forward towards a goal, towards a climax. What's the difference then? The difference in the ancient pagan view is time is cyclical. In other words, everything occurs in a cyclical pattern. It's a fixed necessary pattern. And the point that one of the most important differences, why does it matter? Okay, is because in the cyclical view of time, the human person is insignificant. You are a speck in the cosmos. You are always acted upon. You are not an actor. You are not a free moral agent where you can actually perform an action that changes things. Nothing changes. Everything is recycled over and over and over again. And again, what's the goal of that kind of religion? Get out. You want to break out of that necessary cosmic pattern and get out of it and escape it and dissolve yourself back into the one deity where there is no difference, there is no distinction, and everything is the same. But when we get to Judaism, time goes forward, and the two things happen, maybe more than two things, but two things for sure. This idea that there's something called the future. So in other words, I may have a bad day today, but that doesn't mean I may necessarily have a bad day tomorrow. Things can change. And so the new and the novel thing can occur. And I can actually alter the pattern. I can change things. So I become a responsible moral agent. And moreover, I actually can freely initiate my relationship with God, who invites me to have that relationship with him. So you see, in Judaism, it's so amazing. The human person actually is called to partner with God in the accomplishment of his salvific action in the world of matter, in history. And so time is shot through with purpose. It's shot, and what else happens here, Sai, is the virtue of hope is born. And I give an example of you know, what the opposite thing looks like. And again, some of the viewers and listeners here might be familiar with the Sophocles play Oedipus Rex. Well, Oedipus Rex is a play about somebody who thinks he's someone, but when all is said and done, he's caught in that cosmic pattern of the prophecy that he's going to kill his father and marry his mother. But he thinks that he's in charge when all this, but he's it's a lie. You know, he's caught in a lie where he thinks I'm somebody and I'm my own man and I can make my own decisions, when in fact he's caught in a prophecy where there is no change. And of course, the thing is a tragedy, right? So there's no hope and there is no redemption for Oedipus. Because time is not open to the redemptive action of the gods, G-O-D-S, right? As it is in when we see the openness, the hope, and the future is moving towards a climax where there is going to be this grand unity between God and the world that he's redeeming.
It's extraordinary to think that, you know, we read it in the beginning and then on we go. But just those words in the beginning actually set the table for the whole drama that's about to unfold over all the books of scripture, over all the centuries of Revelation. In the beginning has a tremendous meaning. It means that this has a start and it's going somewhere.
It's going somewhere. Yes. The Judeo-Christianity is, the big word there, eschatological. In other words, we're moving towards a climax, and in the end, we are looking for the second coming of Christ in time, right? In history, where there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth and a new Jerusalem. The world is not going to be dissolved, it's burnt up like a cinder. God is renewing his people and renewing his earth. So again, those are some of the important lessons that are embedded in the first three chapters of Genesis, and I'm trying to uncover them and bring those lessons up to the surface.
The name of the book is In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. Your calls welcome, 888-318-7884. Monica Migliorino Miller is our guest and is the author of the book. Well, I don't think we've avoided it, but we have not yet gotten to. It's impossible to talk about these chapters without talking about the sexual nature of the human person. So can we talk about that? What is God telling us about the sexual nature of the human person in these first three chapters of Genesis after we come back from the break? Is that all right?
That'd be great.
All right, let's take a quick break. Right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Want the latest pro-life news? Want it delivered? Sign up. It's free. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, your source for everything happening now in the fight to protect the sanctity of human life. New episodes delivered every week to your inbox. So if you really want to know,
sign up today.
Go to EWTN.com/pro-life today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about In the Beginning, the new book from our guests, Monica Migliorino Miller. And In the Beginning is Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. And I'm going to I'm going to propose a thought, and if it's not something you agree with, then you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We can talk about it, but I'm going to propose something, a radical, maybe unexpected thought. I think our times are a sexually confused time. I know I'm probably the only person who is.
That's an understatement.
I'm going out on a limb. But we don't want, I mean, in some ways, the reason we don't listen to the first three chapters of Genesis is we don't want to. But mm-hmm. I've often said on this program, I never thought that the part of the Bible that I would end up spending my time defending is male and female, he created them. Mm-hmm, so help us out. What do these chapters say about human identity as a sexual identity? And what can we take away from what these chapters say about that?
Well, I think we need to get back to the idea. I mean, maybe we really haven't, how shall I put it, really appreciated this as deeply as we ought to, even in the centuries of Christianity. And maybe it's just something we've taken for granted up until now. But being male or female, created deliberately by God that way, gender is a gift. And in some ways, it's a mystery. We have to learn how to be male and to be female and to appreciate our embodiedness as such. And what I think there's so much at stake regarding this particular issue. And here's why. To deny the inherent meaning of being male or female, ultimately you'd have to conclude, you have to go down this path, that the world that God has created has no inherent moral meaning. The world of matter is ultimately meaningless. That also means, therefore, Cy, that coming from a particularly Catholic perspective, it means that the world is not sacramental. The world does not really reveal the mystery of God. In fact, what it does is it actually shuts God out. I spent a great deal of time on this because it's so central and so important. I mean, if of all religions, it is Catholicism that takes the world of matter seriously. God has willed that we use physical elements even in our worship. And when the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, he comes as a male person. Why? Because what Jesus is ultimately doing is he is honoring the covenant of marriage. And the ultimate covenant of marriage is between Jesus, the bridegroom, and his bride, the church. And all of this, so let me also then say, when we have in Genesis chapter 2, the creation of Adam and then the Izar, the woman, to free him and to save him from the not good of original solitude, I find one of the most remarkable, staggering passages in all of Scripture is you have to jump to St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, chapter 5, where he says, he talks about the meaning of marriage, that husbands are to love their wives as Christ loved the church, and so on. And then he without any introduction, he takes Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, and he plops it down in chapter 5, where he says, he quotes it directly, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." And then he gives you the ultimate exegesis of what is the meaning of Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. He says, "This is a great mystery because it refers to Christ and the church." Okay, what's the this? What is, you know, when he says this is a great, the this is the original one flesh unity of the first man and the first woman. So that tells us that from the beginning, God intended for male and female sexuality to be sacramental signs. This is not mere chemicals, not just biology. These are sacramental signs that speak the truth of the covenant between God and the world. So when your gender already has that transcendent sacramental sacred meaning, and we need to protect it, we need to honor it. And then, you know, so what's our problem? So why don't we? Well, because we, dare I say it, we're just a bunch of neo-Gnostics at this point in our cultural societal development. We've reverted back to an ancient pagan pessimism, but it even maybe more dangerously, because what we're really saying is that the world of matter has no meaning. What do I have to do? I have to use my mind, my intellect, my rational thought, my spirit, my soul, and I have to impose meaning on a material world that comes to me without any sense. It only makes sense when I impose an intellectual order on what already has no order. And so I can identify as a male, even though I'm really biologically female, and vice versa, or that, you know, the so there you go. I mean, so we need to see through that and celebrate the world of matter and see God's imprint on it. And then that's why I think early on in this interview, I may have said, what is our primary problem right now, almost universally, is a lack of belief in natural law, that the world doesn't, that the world of nature has no meaning. And so we have to impose it. We have to create it ourselves. And we can switch the parts around. We can manipulate everything. We can mutilate ourselves in order to get what we want. We want the world to match my mind rather than my mind and my intellect to probe the truths and the beauty and the sacramental beauty of the world that God has created.
Monica, when you talk that way, it makes me think that so often we say that people do this, you know, they are enamored of abortion and euthanasia and now the transgender stuff because they're arrogant and they want to impose their will on the world. But the way you describe it makes it seem to me that a deeper analysis would say they're hopeless. They don't believe they don't have a hope in the world.
No, and I do think it is a form of neo-Gnosticism, that the world of matter, and I quote the he's known as the father of situation ethics, Joseph Fletcher, who made, okay, for example, he made this outrageous remark once, and actually I went to a lecture when I was getting my master's degree in theology at Loyola University in Chicago. He was a guest lecturer on the campus, so I actually had an opportunity to meet him, and known as the father of situation ethics. And he made a remark that baffled just about everybody when he said, get this, so here you go. He said, creating human life in the laboratory is more human than doing it through sexual intercourse. Okay, more human. Now, how could it be more human to create life in vitro fertilization and in a quote-unquote test tube, right? How is that more human?
Right.
Well, you have to understand his anthropology. For Fletcher, what's important is that the rational thought has to impose itself on the world of nature that is irrational. Okay, the world of nature is irrational, and so I have to create an order that isn't there already. And so if we can control the product in the laboratory, we can control the outcome of who this new human being is going to be. We can add genes, we can subtract genes, we can say this gender, we can say that gender, or what. It said everything I needed to know, right, about where we headed.
Because the what's human is our rationality, not our bodies.
So correct.
So do whatever you want with your body, with bodies. It's a very a terribly impoverished way of looking at the world. You want an enriched way of looking at the world? Look at the way God has given us the lens through which to see the world, the first three chapters of the book of Genesis, and get to know them. Well, first of all, read them, but also get this book, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. The author is Monica Migliorino Miller, and she has been our guest. Thank you, Monica. I just couldn't have enjoyed the time more.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an honor.
And please pray for Monica and her co-defendants as the federal government brings civil charges against them regarding rescues of the unborn.